This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we will visit with John Bel Edwards, state representative from a meet, a Democrat who may be running for governor in 2015. We'll talk with Representative Edwards about Bobby Jindal, the governor of Louisiana, now on the hot seat with a tax reform plan that he must present to voters amid sagging poll numbers. Also, will the governor buckle on Medicaid expansion? We'll discuss it with Representative John Bel Edwards. And we're slated to hear from C. Denise Marcel, city councilwoman from the Metro Council, which has been busy, as we know, and we'll talk with her about what's going on regarding the firing of Police Chief Dwayne White and the embattled Cats leader, Brian Marshall. All this, but now the news on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Our guest is John Bel Edwards to begin our show, the state representative from a meet. If you'd like to join us, 297-5633 or outside Baton Rouge, 877-217-5757. You may reach us via email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. Representative John Bel Edwards, who has emerged as the leader of the loyal opposition to Governor Jindal in the House of Representatives. He is from the lovely hamlet of Amite and is a graduate of the U.S. Military Academy, West Point, New York, 1988, 25 years ago.
Yeah, and it's hard to believe it's been 25 years, but I'll go up at the end of August for a reunion with my classmates. And I'm anxiously looking forward to that, see how much my friends have aged.
How does a kid from Amite end up at West Point?
Well, I just really got lucky. I got good breaks. I got a solid education there in Amite in public schools and was fortunate enough to be able to convince Senator Russell Long and Senator J. Bennett Johnson to nominate me. And then I was selected. And, you know, it's a pretty selective admissions process there. But I got lucky, and I went and had a wonderful education and was able then to spend 8 years on active duty as an infantry officer, which culminated in company command in 82nd Airborne Division as a paratrooper. And so going to Ranger School and being an Airborne Ranger, and it just a great experience traveling the world as you do in the military, whether you want to or not. But it was a great experience.
You were in the Army when the Persian Gulf War began.
I was. I was actually stationed in Hawaii, which is
a long way from
there, and I did not participate in that. But I was in the service, and you know, I did not see any conflict, and you know, I'm thankful for that. Although obviously I would have served, I did not get that opportunity.
In the Louisiana legislature right now, how many members are there, ballpark, who've been in the military?
You know, I'm going to say, I don't know about the Senate so much, but every year we do some things in the House around Memorial Day, Flag Day, and we recognize veterans. And there are probably 20 or so in the House who have served in one of the branches of the armed forces.
Well, it's quite often the case that those who did not serve are the most pugnacious when it comes to going to war.
Yeah, I've seen that, and quite often you see that in national politics and in Congress and that sort of thing, and it's unfortunate. But, you know, that's just where we are. And, of course, we have an all-volunteer armed forces now, and only a very small percentage of Americans actually serve in the armed forces. So I guess it just follows that most of our elected leaders are not going to have the benefit of that experience.
297-5633. We will take some calls for Representative John Bel Edwards, who, of course, is out on the hustings right now, getting his take from the people of our state on what's happening regarding, first and foremost, the governor's tax reform proposal. There's still work to be done. The governor acknowledges that it is being tweaked, but what's your early take on it?
Well, Jim, to be very honest with you, I'm not favorably impressed. I think this is going to operate, if we were to do this, and I hope we won't, but this is going to operate as a tax increase on the vast majority of people of Louisiana. One study put it at 80% of the people would see a net tax increase, and 20% would see a tax cut. It would be the most regressive tax structure in the nation. And my fear is that the middle class and below would actually be negatively impacted the most. And quite frankly, I don't know why you would push a tax restructuring of this magnitude with the benefit of only a couple of months worth of study and preparation, because there are so many assumptions that you have to make, and you need to educate yourself as much as possible. Because he says he wants revenue neutrality, but if you increase the sales tax the way he's talking about doing, and then also extend the sales tax to a great deal of services, we don't have data on many of the services. We don't know how many people get haircuts, how frequently they get haircuts, and how much they pay for them. And so we don't know what revenue we would get when we start putting the 12 or 13% sales tax, whatever it's going to be, but it'll be something in that neighborhood on a haircut. And that's one small example, because the number of services that they're talking about extending the sales tax to is a very long list. And so I would hope that we don't do it. I don't think it'll be good for local government. I don't think it's good for agricultural interests, retailers who are already at a disadvantage with respect to the internet, as well as out-of-state retailers. I think this is going to be bad for car dealers. The oil and gas folks are set to lose some of the exemptions that they rely upon most. And so I think this is a real problem. And tellingly, it's supposedly being done to improve the business tax climate in Louisiana, but I don't see a whole lot of the business community actually coming out in support.
John Bell Edwards, who, in addition to being a graduate of the Military Academy in West Point, he was also on duty for 8 years and is a lawyer, graduate of LSU's law school, 2975633, and has been in the Louisiana legislature as a House member since 2008. Bruce and Walden, beginning with you, Bruce. Good morning. You're on with Representative Edwards.
Yes, hello, gentlemen. I really appreciate your advocacy, Representative. I'm part of a coalition of about 50 health organizations and advocacy organizations called Healthcare for Everyone, and we're fighting real hard for the Medicaid expansion, but we need a legislative rallying point. We need y'all to propose something that we can organize around. So really love to hear what's going on at the legislature about putting some bills on the floor that can force Jindal to cave.
Well, Bruce, thank you for calling. And obviously this is a very important topic, because Louisiana has way more than its fair share of unemployed, I should say uninsured. We also have our unemployed, but uninsured people. And primarily in Louisiana, the uninsured consists of the working poor. A lot of people don't understand that. The poor already have Medicaid, and the people who can afford it already have private insurance unless they have a pre-existing condition. So most of the uninsured, and it's several hundred thousand, are actually working poor. These are people who get up and go to work every day, but they don't make enough money to afford private insurance. They've got a pre-existing condition, or maybe their employer just doesn't offer it. And Bruce, the reason your call is so timely is the question around the Affordable Care Act has changed. It's no longer about whether it's unconstitutional and the U.S. Supreme Court's going to strike it down. It's no longer about whether Congress is going to repeal it. It's no longer about whether we're going to replace the president with someone who is going to call for it to be repealed. It's now the law of the land, and we have to get away from the political arguments and now start talking about governing Louisiana and what's in our best interest. And I'm not sure that it's a tenable position. I know that it's not a tenable position in the long term. The question is about the short term. But to say that we're going to refuse the Medicaid expansion, knowing that our federal tax obligations are not going to go down, they're not going to cut your federal tax bill or mine if we don't participate, but we're going to be sending our tax dollars to Washington so they can be spent in other states, taking care of the uninsured in other states, and going to the hospitals and clinics in other states to provide that care. And other states are going to take advantage of a 100% FMAP for the first 3 years, and it would eventually decrease down to 90%. But there's not a better economic development tool available today in any state than a 90-10 match. And so we're going to have to do it in Louisiana. The question is whether we're going to do it while Bobby Jindal is our governor, or whether we're going to have to wait until someone replaces him in order to make this happen. And as far as whether legislation will be introduced to force him to do it, as you know, he does get to veto bills he doesn't agree with. So assuming that a bill could get passed, he would have to be of a mind to allow it to become law in order to make this happen. So I don't think that will happen based on his recent pronouncements that he is not reconsidered, that he remains adamantly opposed to the expansion. I hope he will change his mind, because I think the people of Louisiana deserve it. Our hospitals, quite frankly, are going to have a hard time keeping their doors open, because we know that the way we're paying for the care for uninsured today is going to go away. And if we don't replace it with what's available, even if what's available is imperfect, it's better than nothing. And our hospitals and clinics and doctors and so forth are going to have a hard time keeping their doors open if we don't do this.
We're talking about 400,000 people, aren't we?
We are.
All right. Well, is it possible that a bill will be offered to say that if the feds don't cover this because of the governor's decision, that it's incumbent for the state to take on the responsibility?
Well, I don't know that we actually need a legislation to say that, because we actually have federal law in place, for example, now, that anyone who has an emergency medical condition can present themselves to a hospital and they can't be turned away. So we're going to be paying for this care. Are we going to pay for it in a smart, intelligent way? Because you can't manage disease through the emergency room. And in order to really get a handle on escalating healthcare costs, you've got to be able to manage disease and produce better outcomes. And so you've got to get these people into clinics, and you've got to have a lot more care available to them than just the emergency room. So yeah, we've got to do better, but we're going to pay one way or the other. The question is whether we're going to be getting the federal government to pay as they've offered to do, or whether we're not going to do that.
Jim on I-10. Jim, good morning.
Good morning. I would like to ask Senator Edwards two questions. One is, the drastic cuts to LSU have finally come out through President Jenkins, that we're no longer going to be a first-tier school with the cuts continuing unless we do something. And the other thing is, with health care being all untied, why the rush to get all this through when Dr. Oplaka has not done a contract with the lake, has not handled prisoner care or handled things in your area in a meet about medical care and everything, and all these things are untied? Why does it all have to be done immediately? Why not thought out and done in a manner? But the education system in this state, higher education, is in dire straits. My sister-in-law is the guidance counselor for the Episcopal Schools of Memphis.
Right.
Well, Jim, I appreciate the call, and yeah, I did read that this morning. Of course, it didn't surprise me, and it shouldn't surprise anyone that LSU is declining. Just 4 years ago, 5 years ago, we were funding higher education in Louisiana at 100% of the Southern Region average. That's now down to 60%. And no state that we want to emulate undertakes these drastic cuts to higher education. It's just not sustainable if we want to be a state where we keep our best and brightest at home, where we have robust economic development and job creation and a high quality of life. So I wasn't surprised by President Jenkins' remarks. I know he tries to avoid speaking in those terms because you don't want to advertise the fact that you're in decline, but also it's not a responsible thing to do to put your head in the sand and act as if it's not happening. So we've got to do better, and this is just another example of how you cannot just cut your way to prosperity. You cannot cut your way every time, every year, twice a year, both at the outset of the fiscal year and then in the mid-year. These cuts are just not good.
297-5633 is your number. Our guest is Representative John Bell Edwards of AME. Back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Representative John Bell Edwards, Democrat from AME, is with us. He heads the Democratic Caucus in the Louisiana Legislature. And before we go back to the phone lines, are you running for governor?
Jim, that's a interesting question. I do intend to run in 2015. I just know from my 6 years now in the legislature that I believe we're heading in the wrong direction, and we're getting there in a hurry, and we've got to change course quickly. And quite frankly, my ability to influence things in the legislature is certainly limited. You know, I'm one of 105 in the House and one of 144 in the entire legislature. So, yes, I do intend to run.
Is the state ready for another Governor Edwards?
Well, you know, I hadn't been asked that question before, but I certainly will run on my own ideas. And Governor Edwards, my family always did support him, and still very, very fond of him, and certainly wish him nothing but the best with what he's got going on in his life right now, which, as you know, is a full life.
Well, as you know, being a member of 105, the number of members of the Louisiana House, your influence is somewhat limited, but you have gained quite a following among Democrats. But if I remember right, you literally are a backbencher. They have you like in the back row, don't they?
Yeah, but I chose to move back there, actually. I wanted to move back there and sit with Sam Jones, who's my seatmate from Franklin down in St. Mary Parish, and he's a good friend. And I actually like being down there because you can see everything that's happening on the floor in front of you.
Chris on Segan. Good morning, Chris. You're on with Representative John Bell Edwards, candidate for governor in 2015.
Hi, Jim. Thanks for taking my call. And I wanted to thank Representative John Bell Edwards for coming on. I'm really excited to hear that you're running for governor in the next few years. I have so much hope for what you could accomplish, and actually, you know, for somebody that is actually focused on Louisiana and focused on the citizens of Louisiana instead of the people in Iowa and Florida and everywhere else. You know, I got a little bit late to the conversation, so I'm not sure if y'all touched on this, but I wanted your comments on Governor Jindal's opposition to Louisiana being part of the Affordable Care Act, and you know, how much is that really going to hurt the you know, the lower and the middle class people?
All right, we did talk about that, but do you think the governor, there's any possibility that he will change his mind?
Well, it's always possible, and as you may know, around the country, there are a number of Republican governors in very red states, Kasich in Ohio, Brewer in Arizona, and others who have now that this is the law of the land, and they've got to make a decision as opposed to make it a political issue, they have decided to take the expansion, and all of the reasons why they cite being the right thing to do apply equally here in Louisiana. So there's always a chance, but the governor reaffirmed just last week that he is not going to reconsider his position on this issue, and that he is just not going to do it. And I'm afraid that he put himself in this position for political reasons, and now he can't find a way to extricate himself. But I'm not worried so much about him and his political future. I'm worried about the people of Louisiana and our hospitals and clinics who need those reimbursement mechanisms in place so that they can continue to provide the services that we need to provide to the people here in Louisiana.
Dan downtown. Dan, good morning. You're on with Representative Edwards.
Yes. Do you believe that there's no free lunch anymore? If we want to have a top-tier flagship university and even proper security for the present and future governors and their families, we have to pay for it by reinstating the Stelly plan or raising taxes otherwise.
Well, Dan, I absolutely believe there's no free lunch. I mean, we can't you know, we're in Lent now. We got Easter coming up, but I don't think the Easter Bunny is going to bring us money to run the state with. So there absolutely is no way to have the services that we need, the educational system that we need, public safety, K through 12, health care, without paying for it. Now, you know, we are the third lowest tax state in the nation when you look at the combined local and state tax burden. I don't think anybody wants us to be a high tax state. I certainly don't want that. But we've got to be able to provide the essential services that the people expect and that will give us the quality of life that we all deserve. And, you know, there's just certain basic obligations that any civilized society owes to its people. And I would tell you that we have crossed the threshold, and we're at a point now where we're not providing those very well. I've got an LSU hospital in my district, and we cut clinics without providing alternative means of health care to the people who depended upon those. So we have to do better. And now, as far as reinstating the STELE, let me just tell you, as a political reality, I don't see any chance that will happen. And I'll take it one step further. If we repeal the state income tax, we're not going to get that back in my lifetime either. It just isn't going to happen, and that's why we have to be extremely careful about taking these steps before we actually take them. And we shouldn't be hurried into doing it. We shouldn't be browbeaten into doing it or politically challenged to the point where we do it. We've got to do what's in the best interest of the state in the long term. And quite honestly, I'm not sure that's the focus of the administration right now. My fear is that he's more concerned about his future than ours.
Doc on Old Hammond. Hi, Doc. You're on the air with Representative Edwards.
Hello, Representative. Got a question for you. When Mr. Jindal came in, one of his platforms is to cut the size of state government. Would you happen to know how many state employees that we have in the state government right now?
I can't tell you how many state employees we have with any precision. I know that it has declined by about 6,000 or so over the last 4 years. You can't go if you go to multiple sources there, you get different answers to that question. We have several thousand fewer employees than we had, and we certainly have an awful lot of vacant positions within state government. So there has been a decrease in the size of state government, and correspondingly, there's been a decrease in the amount that it costs as well. But you have classified and unclassified employees, and you know, quite often I hear that we've increased the unclassified and decreased the classified, and you know, it's hard to know. But state government has absolutely been cut under Governor Jindal. And, you know, the truth is I don't remember him when he ran the first time saying that was a goal of his. And, in fact, the first year he was governor, we spent $1 billion more state general fund than Governor Blanco had spent in her last year. So it didn't appear to me he came into office initially thinking he was going to cut the size of government. That's not what he did until the STELE tax got repealed and we went into a recession. So I'm not sure that's what he said he was going to do. That is what we eventually had to do, at least to a large extent, based upon just the economic realities.
Well, last report, the state had about 105,000 state employees, of which 73,000 earned under $50,000 a year.
Yeah, you know, And I actually think the last number I had the total number of state employees below $100,000.
100,000 total?
Correction, below 100,000 employees. And clearly the vast majority of our employees are not making six figures as some people.
Fewer than 4,000.
Right. And that's just one of the stereotypes that we have about state employees, you have to kind of make sure that you temper that with reality.
297-5633 is your number. We'll take a few email inquiries for Representative Edwards. Steve Wenham, former budget director to Governor Romer, says thanks to Representative Edwards for his good work, but wouldn't he agree it is disingenuous to assume the governor has a plan other than the elimination of income and franchise taxes? The legislature will have to come up with the balance, be it cuts, taxes, or both, and nothing they can do will be popular.
Well, Steve, I think you're right, and in fact, if you listen to the governor when he speaks publicly, he's only directed his staff to do two things. One is to repeal the individual and corporate income tax and franchise tax, and to do it in a revenue-neutral way. So that says to me he wants to be able to go around the country and say that it was his idea to get rid of the income tax, and whatever replaces that revenue, well, that's going to be somebody else's responsibility. And will the sales tax increase be unpopular? Absolutely. And, you know, people know they have a state income tax on May the 15th. They're going to know they have a higher sales tax every day. And this is not just going to be a 2 or 3% increase on existing retail sales. There will be a number of services that are going to be taxed for the first time ever, and that tax is going to go up 12% because you're going to get the full state and local tax on that. And we will have the highest sales tax in the nation, and it will be unpopular, and it will lead to things down the road that will be even more unpopular. For example, if we have the highest sales tax in the nation, local government's not going to be able to renew their sales taxes. But what they will be able to do to pay for essential services is increase their property taxes, because most voters have a homestead exemption. But who isn't homestead exempt? Business. So this is a way of transferring the tax burden over time more onto business than is currently the case. And the ironic thing is this is supposed to improve the business tax climate. What I would ask you, go talk to some small businessmen in the retail sector and find out whether they want to be charging higher sales tax. Go talk to a car dealer and see if they want to put 2 or 3% more sales tax on a car. As hard as it is to qualify someone for a loan, most cars now cost between $30,000 and $40,000. This is going to add $1,000 or more to the cost of those cars that could have gone to a down payment that would help them get qualified. Go talk to agricultural interests. Mm-hmm. Every time they plant a crop, they're gambling. They would much rather pay a small income tax on a profitable year than a higher sales tax every year on everything. Go talk to oil and gas and see whether they want to lose the severance tax exemption to make up for the income tax that they would also not have to pay. So this is a big deal. It's a restructuring that is so profoundly important, and the implications are so huge that really we should never do anything like this over a 2 or 3 month time frame. It needs to be studied and analyzed and debated. And I suspect we won't know until the very last minute exactly what the proposal is, because they're not going to produce anything in writing until the filing deadline for legislation.
Here's a question that says, my question is whether Representative Edwards can cite a clear-cut example of a public policy decision taken by the Jindal administration that put the interest of the state of Louisiana and its people over those of Jindal's national political aspiration. This one from Silas Bogue.
Well, I mean, certainly the governor, you know, now in his sixth year, and with all of the different policy initiatives that he has pushed for, many of those were things that I agreed with, and even though I disagree with him fairly often on controversial big things, there have been many cases, and in fact, most of the time, I've supported initiatives that he's proposed. And quite frankly, I'm very glad to see that he's going to take a smart on crime approach this year, at least in some respect, with respect to how many people we're incarcerating for long periods of time for relatively minor offenses when they can be better dealt with through drug courts and treatment as opposed to prisons. You know, if you take someone who is young and they have minor offenses and you put them in jail, if that's all you offer them, you're teaching them to be a criminal, and you're going to be responsible for that person. You're going to be paying for that person to be in and out of jail probably for the rest of their life. But if you offer them treatment and do a little better, you're going to save yourself money. You're going to turn that individual into a law-abiding, tax-paying citizen. And so there are some things that he's proposing even this year that I give him great credit for, and I look forward to working with him on.
All right. Here's a question from Delia. Is it the case that in other states, governors refuse to disclose their schedules, speak to the media on a regular basis, assemble national political campaign staff using states' taxpayer dollars, and spend one-third of their time traveling outside of their states?
Well, you know, I haven't done a comparative analysis. I have a hard time believing that there's another governor in the country that spent 86 days last year basically on paid leave outside the state of Louisiana, attending to purely political events at the national level. And, you know, what makes that really, I think, problematic is while he was gone back at home, we were closing mental hospitals, we were closing prisons, we were trying to sell real estate that the state owns, hospitals and parking garages. We haven't trained a new state police officer in 5 years. We haven't trained a new wildlife and fisheries officer in the same period of time. We have tremendous challenges here in Louisiana, and to have a governor more concerned about national political ambitions than what's going on here, you take 86 days paid out of state, and you hadn't been to the sinkhole once down in Assumption Parish. I mean, I understand what he's doing. I think it's more about his future than ours, and so I mean, your question is. I understand your question, but I can't tell you for sure that no other governor has done that. But I would be very surprised if other governors are behaving the way he did, at least last year.
Here's one from Hannah who asks, please tell Representative Edwards, I'm a huge fan. Hope more of his fellow lawmakers will develop his backbone, to stand up to the governor and outside money interests, especially when it comes to education deform. Does Representative Edwards sense a turning of the tide this legislative session?
Well, Hannah, you know, it's hard to know whether there's going to be a turning of the tide. I happen to believe that many of my colleagues supported some of the initiatives of the governor's last year, despite their own reservations, because it's painful. Even for me, it's not an easy thing to be opposed to the governor and to say so. Because you know you want to get along with the governor, you want the asphalt coming to your district and that sort of stuff. But the truth is, I believe the governor's popularity is at an all-time low. He's 1 year closer to leaving office, so his lame duck status is that much more an issue. And my legislators, my colleagues, who went home after the session last year and started talking to their constituents. Many of them realized that they hurt themselves by following the governor too closely. So I would hope that we'll come back on April the 8th with a little different mindset, with more independence, and that we will exercise our own best judgment as to what's right for the state of Louisiana and not be quite as deferential as a body, as a collective group, to the governor.
Well, thank you, Representative Edwards, and hopefully we'll talk to you frequently before, during, and after the session. And thanks for announcing your candidacy for governor today on this show.
Thank you, Jim. I appreciate it.
Take care. We'll be back with Councilwoman C. Denise Marcel after this 90-second pause on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, and our guest at this time is C. Denise Marcel, councilwoman from Baton Rouge, who is one of the more active members of the Metro Council, and we'll talk with her about what's going on with that august body. But a few things I think we need to address. Should we elect our police chief?
Well, that's going to be one of the discussions. That item comes up on the agenda on the 27th. Of February for a discussion. So we're going to allow the people to come in and say what they have to say about it. And, of course, I've been getting a lot of calls saying that we should.
This is going to be your item?
It is my item.
Why do you think we should elect our police chief?
Well, the item that I have on the agenda is not necessarily that I'm saying that we should elect it. Initially, my response to everything was to let's discuss it among the council members. And as you know, that item was knocked off of the agenda for discussion. Now I'm placing it on there to not only discuss it, but take any actions that we deem necessary. So I thought it was important that I at least open up that line of discussion, Jim, because I was getting so many calls saying that they thought it was politics, the reason the chief was taken out. And a lot of people had suggested that they may want to elect a chief and or look at the committee that we formed to talk about whether we should merge the city police and the sheriff.
So you must think it's a good idea, though.
I think it's something definitely worth looking at.
Okay. See Denise Marcel, who has opined in recent days about the firing of Chief Dwayne White by Mayor President Kip Holden. In the words of Rodney King, can't we all get along? What's going on? What's going on with those two guys?
And you know what, Jim? That's what we're that's what we're looking forward to, the healing of the city, because it seems that this situation has certainly divided a lot of the community. And I would like to see this community heal. I don't know where we go from here. How do we get there?
297-5633 or 877-217-5757. Charles on North Foster. Good morning, Charles.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Councilman Martell. And I was one of the persons who called your office. Let me say thank you and the other council members.
All right, hold on for just a moment, Charles. You're fading in and out. Let's see if we can get you to a better spot, and we want to get your question for See Denise Marcel. How much reaction has there been from your constituents over the last few days regarding this firing of Chief White?
It's been a lot of reaction. We also had a town meeting immediately following the mayor's hearing of the chief, and people were pretty vocal. Even on short notice, there were a lot of people present there, and for the most part, those people supported the chief. There were a few people who said that they did not. But the majority of the people that came forth said that they supported the chief. Even had some former officer that came and testified on behalf of, on behalf of what she thought were some problems that do exist in the police department.
Did it surprise you that he was fired?
Did it surprise me that he was fired? No, not because of the rumors that I had heard for months that he was going to be fired. So I wasn't exactly shocked. I wasn't exactly supportive of it either.
Well, do you think he was doing a good job, a bad job, an in-between job? Does he get an incomplete, an A, a B, a C, a D, or any of?
I would give the chief an A. He has bridged the gap
An A.
Yes. In my opinion, he's bridged the gap between the African-American community and the police. He has built a lot of trust back, and I think that him bringing in Brave, I've been getting calls from my constituents in the 70805 area that say that they can now sleep at night, that the guns are not shooting constantly. And I think he's made an impact on not just 70805, but throughout this city.
Charles, let's give you another shot. Charles, good morning. Please be brief. You're on with Denise Marcel.
No problem. Like I said, we can't accept the mayor who's in the police chief who's in the mayor's back pocket, or we can't trust the mayor who's in the police union's back pocket. What I want to know is, how can a voter like me in Baton Rouge, who want the same rights that Baker, Zachary, and Century have, how can we help? And should the mayor appoint someone like John Russell Honoré to look over the police department until we decide whether we want an appointed or elected police chief?
Chief Honoré, that's an interesting thought.
Yes, it is. That would be, sir, thank you for your question. That would be totally up to the mayor who he appoints. That authority is now in the plan of government, goes to the mayor. And that's the discussion, whether or not that should be by the people. I've heard the pros and the cons of whether or not we should elect a chief. On the flip side of that, may be some issues of people putting a lot of money behind a chief and still controlling that office. So there's some concerns on both sides.
297-5633 is your number for C. Denise Marcel. Carmen and Gonzalez. Hello, Carmen. You're on the air with Councilwoman Marcel.
Hello, Jim. My question is, what was William Daniels' role in all of this? It seems that he had a lot to do with the police chief being fired.
William Daniels, who once ran against Mayor Holden in 2004, former state lawmaker. He's now his top aide. You're smiling. Did he have something to do with this? William Daniel?
The letter was written by Mr. Daniels to the mayor, asking him to look at firing the chief. However, the Mr. Daniels works for the mayor, so I don't think that he had a whole lot to do with it. Well, that's my personal opinion.
And I've always found William Daniel and Mayor Holden to be straightforward people. They obviously had reasons. You may not think they're reasons that were good enough if you're giving the chief an A, but they must have had some reasons to do this. They didn't just wake up some morning and say, we're going to go fire somebody. Let's start with Chief White.
Absolutely. I'm not discounting anything that the mayor said. You asked me my opinion of the chief. That's my opinion. I would grade him an A. And I apparently don't have the information that the mayor had.
Is that an A-plus or an A-minus?
That's an A-plus.
An A-plus. 297-5633, Sean in Broadmoor. Hi, Sean.
Hello, how are you?
Yes, I'm doing well. Go ahead.
My question is, if we were to elect the police chief, how would people voting know who would be good and who's bad? I mean, that just seems a little, it just doesn't seem like that would work out too well.
Well, one of the things when you're electing someone, I would think that if we chose to go that route, that we would put things in place to say that you had to be in law enforcement for a number of years. Same thing that we do for our judges. You can't just run for judge off the street. You have to have a JD and those types of things. So you would have to set the criteria for a chief, what you would want to see in that chief. And you would go from there. But it would be like anything else that we elect. You have to have certain criteria set.
Jim in Denham Springs. Hello, Jim. You're on the air on WRKF with Denise Marcel.
Hi, how you doing? Councilman Marcel, I've got a couple of quick questions for you. When we're talking about electing a police chief, we're not a small town. And so what electing a chief would do, we would, of course, have to have residency requirements. It would not allow us to bring in somebody from outside of even the state, in a hunt for somebody who is qualified to lead a town, a city of the size of Baton Rouge. How are we going to do anything that isn't just going to entrench the current attitudes, because all you're going to do is just keep electing people from within the system? We're not going to fix the system that way. That just entrenches what we have. And if we try to combine the sheriff's office and the police, the Baton Rouge Police Department, how do you deal with outlying areas that are outside of the city of Baton Rouge, but within the area?
Okay, first, your first question was?
He was veering around and
The having the police come from mm-hmm. outside of the Baton Rouge area from another state is what you're saying. So
how do you deal with crime outside the city limits?
No, I think his question was, okay, the first one, how do you elect a chief? Because you're going to get a chief within inside of the city limits if they're elected, kind of like the sheriff who has to live in this parish somewhere. I think that's your question. Am I correct?
Yeah, you're correct.
Okay, so That's one of the things that's one of the cons of it. If you elect someone, then of course they have to be from this parish. However, you asked another question about combining the two and how do we deal with that in terms of people outside of the parish. First of all, my opinion may be a whole lot different than other people, because I believe that Central, Baker, and Zachary have their own chiefs and have their own mayors, and we should have our own mayors. So that would eliminate those people from those parishes. In my opinion, they should not be able to vote for our chief or mayor or anyone else, because they have their own parish and their own system. So that would be opening up a whole nother can of worms.
Steve Miley says that the mayor should appoint Shaquille O'Neal as his police chief. He says he wants to be in law enforcement, by the way, Shaquille O'Neal, and he has indicated in the past that he would like to work undercover. If he were police chief, that would not be possible, but maybe he would be well-suited. He would certainly be a strong presence in the department.
He would be very visible.
Michael on a Corsi. Good morning, Michael. You're on with Denise Marcel. Hi, Michael. Michael?
Yes, I am.
Yes, you're on the air.
Okay. Good morning, Ms. Marcel.
Good morning.
There were 14 points that the mayor... Good morning. Good morning. There were 14 points that the mayor... Yes, I'm here.
All right. Let's try Ben Daly and Baker. Ben Daly, you're on with Denise Marcel. Hi. You're on
yes,
the air.
Yes, and good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Right after Katrina, there were state police from both Michigan and, I think, New Mexico pulled out after helping the Baton Rouge police because of, they perceived racism. And I noticed that recently Mayor Holden charged that Chief White raised the issue for political reasons. I would like to have the Councilwoman comment on that and whether or not there was any validity in that point if it was raised by Chief White.
Well, first of all, I cannot answer for the mayor. I don't know why he made the statements he made. But secondly, I can tell you that we are on a consent decree by the U.S. Department of Justice that's saying that apparently that we have not done enough in terms of discrimination against blacks and against women. Because if we had, then we wouldn't still be under that consent decree. So that would answer itself. And mm-hmm. the chief has only been there, I think, 19 months or something like that. So this has been going on since it was filed in 1977, and it was ordered in 1980. We're still under the consent decree. And you get from under that consent decree by doing something different and your department following to make those the recommendations of the consent decree, which is to hire more African Americans and to hire more women. So apparently the U.S. Department of Justice does not believe we've done enough.
So what can be done in the near term?
Well, I think we need to start adhering to what's in the consent decree. We're working very hard, certainly, on some other consent decrees. We have to adhere to the consent decree to hire more African Americans and change the policies of the police department as they currently exist. And again, that's not from the chief. That's from the consent decree.
Michael on Corsi, let's give this another shot. Get right to your question. I don't need another good morning, Michael. You're on the air.
Good morning. The 14 points that the mayor said he brought up against the chief answered. How do you feel if the mayor would have come back and said, let's talk about this, and let's resolve these issues and move forward? Do you think that that would have been a better thing to do?
I certainly don't think at this point that there was going to be any coming to Jesus meeting between the mayor and the chief. It was a lot of things out there, a lot of allegations. I don't believe it would have been good for the city for us to move forward with that, in my opinion, because of it seems really to become a hostile working relationship, in my opinion, because of everything that has come out of it.
All right. What's going on with the CAT system right now? Your friend Brian Marshall is on the hot seat. Is he going to survive this?
I don't know. I'm not on that board. However, I do believe that Mr. Marshall has done a great job as well. And I would certainly like to see him move forward. My concern with that, Jim, is I didn't see a lot of people running over there to take over the CATS board when they didn't have any money. And now that they have, they've survived. They've done a lot with a little. I don't see why we couldn't trust them with a lot.
What can we do to improve our public transportation system now that there is some funding that was not there before?
Well, of course, you can put more buses on the street, and that's been my concern all along. If you make it top-heavy and you bring in contractual management, then you're going to spend more money on the management and less money on the operations. I'd prefer seeing the operations on the street rather than top-heavy management, and that's always my concern when you talk about doing contracts or privatizing any part of that system. I believe that some changes have to be made. There's money to make those. They need an HR person. Some of those positions that they were working without those people that they can now fill, I think is, it's common sense. I mean, I can go out and buy a Cadillac if you give me some money. Otherwise, I'll ride around in this Volkswagen.
Has Brian Marshall been a scapegoat?
I kind of believe in some aspects he has, because the money is there now again, and people want an opportunity to direct where that money goes.
Okay. This measure to have an elected police chief, when does it go before the Metro Council?
On February 27th.
February 27th, which is 1 week from today.
Correct. And we're inviting the public to come out, and those that are calling in, if you can make it, it's 4 o'clock. And come out and let your voices be heard. This is not a done deal. This is not a Denise Marcel way. I am inviting the entire Baton Rouge to come out and say what they'd like to see happen.
Well, I would imagine you'll get quite a response. Maybe even the mayor will show to make his case for keeping things the way they are. I think he believes that the chief should be appointed by the mayor.
I'm sure he does.
And if you were mayor, if I were mayor, we'd probably believe the same thing.
I probably would.
Okay. Well, thank you for being with us today. And thanks to Richard Fisher for producing. Thanks to John Bell Edwards for announcing on this show that he is a candidate for governor in the year 2015. Until tomorrow, stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.